Ah, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
You are listening to the Joe Rogan Experience Review Podcast. We find little nuggets, treasures, valuable pieces of gold in the Joe Rogan Experience Podcast and pass them on to you, perhaps expand a little bit. We are not associated with Joe Rogan in any way. Think of us as the Talking Dead to Joe's Walking Dead. Enjoy the show. Podcast.
You're listening to the Joe Rogan Experience Review.
What a bizarre thing we've created.
Now with your host, Adam Thorne.
This might either be the worst podcast or the best one
two,
of all time.
One, go. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of the JRE Review. Big week. Joined as always by my sidekick, Garen.
What's up, guys? How we doing? Big week, big week.
So we got Doug Stanhope, legend, Tony Hinchcliffe, equally as legendary, and then Radio Raheem.
Right.
Before we get started, though, anything going on in the world that I should know about that I probably don't?
I don't know that much about stock market and inflation and whatnot, but the past few days I know have been incredibly down, and my account has taken a huge hit. I think it's down 75%. All these crypto things, it seems like the bottom's just falling out. Like, what are your thoughts on that? I don't know too much about crypto, but my one buddy, we were just at the gym today, and we're having a chat, and he's like, thank God you didn't get invested with that node situation, because apparently, like, the mining and whatnot, he was in for, like, I don't know, I want to say between 10 and 15, and then he's like, it's gone, basically. Like, it's bottomed out. I don't know about bottomed out, but real, real close.
So... wait, what's the node?
He tried to explain it to me. Apparently, these like cryptocurrencies, I don't want to speak like I know, I have a whole lot of information, but there's a way to mine, apparently, and it's like, I think it's more or less they're mining your data, because the way he described, you just have to like check in and like a thing, and then it would like break down where you were at a certain time of day. I thought it sounded really intrusive, but at the end of the day, I think they can hunt that information down regardless, but... it was an interesting thing. He called it mining, so I'm assuming that's what it's that would be my frame of reference. They're mining your data.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. I think it's like a way to make more Bitcoin somehow. Right. You like mine your own, and you use computers for it. Yeah, a buddy of mine that I went on the boat with today was saying that, he's lost like half his crypto money or something, and he's like, well, I'm not worried about it, I just kind of leave it and see what's going on. It seems like a lot of something.
I agree. My brother brought up a good point the other day. I mean, he's not stressing, because I think when you put money in the stock market, you need to realize it's a gamble anyway. So this idea that it's not, at least that's how I perceive it, and that's how I look at it. Like, if I'm willing to bet it, then it's willing to be out of my account. I'm not going to base my sole interest on that. But the idea, I don't know, where was I going with that thought? I'm sorry.
It doesn't seem good, though, to, like, lose. Because here's the thing. They always say, oh, over time it goes up and you'll make more money. You know, you're overall you'll be over. But my issue always is, well, but you never know when you want to pull that money out. It only works if you're like, I won't touch it until I'm exactly 70, and hopefully that's not when it all collapses again.
I think there's something to be said. I was going there. I just figured out my frame of thought, but it was something tangible. There's not a whole lot of like history on Bitcoin at this time, so it seems like you're investing in something and hoping for something, but you don't really know because you don't have a frame of reference to see what happens. You know?
Yeah. I mean, well, good luck to him. Hopefully, it comes back, because it sounds like a lot of people are going to lose a shit ton of money if that shit collapses.
I don't know how that works. It seems, I mean, a lot of people say double down too when it's this, that all the investors at this point would say you need to buy more, I would think, because that's...
well, because they're probably, they want you to do that, so their crappy investments come back to life. I mean, imagine being one of those guys that has like 20 million in Bitcoin and you think you're just pulling out of control, and today you wake up and it's 8 million. Now, yeah, you still have 8 million. You're doing fine. But knowing that it was that much more, like a few days before, right. I mean, just the idea that you could lose like $12 million in a week right. and... Nah, I don't know, man. That sounds... I'm not much of a gambler anyway, so I don't like to do it in any direction.
That was a weird pill to swallow, too, because you don't... That's the thing. The highs are high and the lows are lows. The thing about the stock market is it's... I don't know. All the guys invested are just looking for zeros. No criticism, but, like, the fulfillment of that, it seems like a weird thing. They're just trying to find angles all the time, and businesses are just trying to navigate, you know? I don't know.
Well, they say you got to make your money work for you, and that's what people are doing when they do that. So that's what they've heard. They're doing their best to do that.
They're rich as hell, a lot of them. I agree.
Yeah. I don't know. It just makes me want to hide money under my mattress every time I hear about things right. collapsing. I'm like, nah. All right, let's jump over to Doug and see what he's up to. I mean, they start off talking about the Roe versus Wade shit, which, like, I don't know all the ins and outs. Like, I don't think it's passed, but it looks like the Supreme Court is going to pass something to make that abortion illegal again in most places, or if it's up to the state, more, right?
Yeah, I think I just heard Kamala Harris say that on a little tidbit today that is the case. It's so weird how they navigate through this and how the right has to be the right and the left has to be the left. We just find these different issues that have to separate us. It's so interesting. You just have to pick a team, too, because it's like if you're – I mean, you already know. It's like if you're on the right, you're on the right. If you're on the left, you have to believe a certain way. So it's just like in this situation, this is like an unprecedented kind of human situation. I don't know how to perceive it, you know? I think the way Joe breaks it down, sorry to interrupt, it just makes sense. It's like kind of dictated on the circumstance and how long the baby's been in the womb. That kind of, I don't know. I don't know where to comment or what to comment. The idea that anybody has anything to say about your body kind of falls in line with that vaccine thing too, right?
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, it's interesting with like certain laws when you look at being progressive, right? And we move into the future and we don't do things like we did in the past. At some point, you just kind of expect things to stay that way. It's like, oh, we sorted that out. That's no longer an issue that we tackle. But it turns out it's not really true. It's like we can go back to any way of living. I mean, obviously we still have all our technology and we still live in, you know, whatever time it is, right? It could be 2030, but some kind of, I mean, is it out of the realm of possibility that one day they could have like separate drinking fountains again? It's that idea you think, well, no, that will never happen again. We work through that and that's not where it is. But it seems like some things can get changed so far back, and
yeah, man,
I don't know, man.
It seems like we're so progressive in so many areas, and technology is not, I don't want to say arbitrary, but I'm trying to think in more like human thoughts that we're a little bit more mindful and at least we're more caring, hopefully. But this, I mean, it seems like it gets lost in the shuffle when it comes to that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that one's above my pay grade, man. But I don't like the sound of it. I mean, to me, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. I just think of these, like, poor women that will be forced to, like, not...
I mean, how many...
make their own choice.
How many foster children do you know? How many... people are in different circumstances. I do have I don't want to say a problem, but I do think that Joe raises a good point when he starts talking about late-term abortions, because there's a difference between like a group of cells and then something with a heartbeat. Like I can kind of see that angle, you know? So it's, at the end of the day, if you really, you got to stick to your bones, I think, kind of in this, it seems liberal, but I talked to Alicia about it too. She's like, I just don't see why, and this is across the board, the government should be able to intervene with anything that you want to do with your body, period. Like, you can't draw the line anywhere. And I think that that's kind of falls in line about, they're talking about all drugs being legal too. I'm kind of on board with a lot of the libertarian ideas, to be honest. Like, there's not a...
I definitely fold more on that side of things, I would imagine.
I mean...
For sure.
It would suck to have a, like, 8-month-old baby that you just were delaying or couldn't find financial... I mean, that's got to be a psychological mess up in your brain, too. Like, to do both acts, you know? I don't know. That's a tough pill, but...
Well, some countries have a thing called assisted suicide, where if, you know, under certain conditions, I don't think you can just go in being super healthy and be like, yeah, I want to kill myself. But, you know, if you're terminally ill or disabled or just really struggling with different illnesses, like, I know a few countries in Europe, at least, that will allow you to do that. And they don't let you do that here. I'm pretty sure they don't have it in England either. But I kind of feel like that should be a thing.
I mean, if you're suffering, man.
It's your choice, right? It's your body. It's your choice. And
with that,
if they can help you prepare for it so that it's not super brutal for your family and, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know, man.
With that same analogy, I was going to try and deflect or say something like that. I was trying to not agree with you somehow, but... I think about the people that keep their dogs alive until they're 18 years old and are injecting 3 and 4 shots into them, and they're blind and they're running into them. It's like, are you doing that for you or are you doing that for them? Because I don't want any being to suffer. So I feel like if you're suffering, you should have the opportunity to decide, hey, I just want to end this suffering and I want to do it in a responsible way, in a caring way. And maybe, I mean, it seems like if you were to seek that out, I don't know, man. It's kind of like falls in line with that other discussion, the same exact discussion. It's kind of a...
Well, you can put your animals through, like, long-term chemotherapy if they get cancers. And that's pretty painful and brutal. And it's like, yeah, they get to live a bit longer, but it's not really cool, is it?
If you really love something, you got to just be willing to not let it suffer. That's how I always see it. Like, you got to... If your always intention is the best intention for the other human or the other animal or... whatever the being is, then I think you're coming from a place of grace. So,
yeah, I'm with you. I agree. The Doug and Joe, what's cool when you get those two together is like they often talk about their early days of stand-up. And it's hard to even really think. Like, you see either of these guys live, they're so polished and they've done it for so long that it's almost impossible to imagine a time when they couldn't do this at all. But of course, they at first, when they started comedy, they couldn't. Everything was brutal. And they talk about some of their road gigs that they had to do. And Doug brought up having to go to Great Falls, Montana, which is like a tiny little town, you know, that's like, I think, like 4 hours from Bozeman. And having to, like, I just can't imagine, like, having to travel between all the cities here, like, doing these gigs for, like, $50, get to some place. And, I mean, I know what a lot of the bars and places look like here in these different towns. So they're not ideal spots to perform in. And I couldn't imagine that most of the people going in there, you know, 30 years ago, whenever Doug was performing, were, like, all that stoked. Right. That some guy was doing comedy that night. It must have just been so brutal.
Yeah, so that would have made him, what, like 20, between 20 and 25, I imagine? Yeah, just a young dude.
Probably about that, yeah.
Young dude in Bozeman. Or, I mean, just...
Yeah,
just,
no one's listening to that. Not wearing a cowboy hat. It's like, who the fuck is this guy? Get out of here.
Dude, that guy, he's definitely one of one, for sure.
Yeah. Dude, he gave his address out on the pod. What a lunatic. And he's like, you can already Google it. It's like, don't tell him that either.
I mean, to that point, and just to his personality, like, when they were, Joe was saying, he just called him a spade a spade. He's like, you drink every day, you smoke every day, but you're relatively healthy for what it's worth. I think that the stress level, who knows? I think he's over the anxiety and whatnot. Who knows? But... he seems to be riding it pretty well. Like, for what it's like, him and John Daly are the two poster boys, and are the two poster boys. And I mean, Warren Buffett to that extent, you know, like, there's a lot to be said about what stress causes on the body. It's like, stress free life. I don't know. Who knows? But he also said he doesn't like to go to doctors, which I agree with. And he also said, I'm just going to let this machine go till it breaks. So.
Well, listen, he says that now, but you wait till some really funky things start happening with his body. I'm sure he's going to the doctor then.
Right.
And it's easy to say, yeah, he's doing fine, but that's because he hasn't gone in for any sort of checkup. And I bet there's part of a reason why he doesn't. Supposedly he has, like, two hernias he hasn't fixed.
I'm kind of in a, I'm in a weird spot. I think I mentioned it last week with my wrist, too. It's kind of coming to a point where I'm just being an idiot. Now I got to go get an x-ray. I think I'm going to seek out some Gavin Newsom insurance here.
Oh, you did? What did you do to your wrist?
I jammed up.
Jerking off?
A really hard jerk session. I don't know. It was rough. No, I just jammed it. I don't know how I did it. I was at the gym.
Oh. And how long has it been bad for?
It's been bad for about a good 6-7 weeks now. So, I mean, not bad. Like, the pain is manageable. That's the problem. But I just haven't taken any time off being a bullheaded David Goggins idiot. So, it's probably on me. I'll own that. But
yeah, go get that checked out, dude.
Fair enough.
Come on. Go have it looked at. Obamacare, mm-hmm. That's what you need. It's all you write out. Mm-hmm. Oh, and along with that, Joe talks about the three stages of comedy. And I think it took a while for him to get that out because I wasn't even sure what the three stages were. I did write them down, though. Shoot, where did I put that? Oh, yeah, number one. Do anything you can to get a laugh. Like, that's really all you can think about when you first start is just try and get a chuckle. It doesn't matter how you do it. Even if you have to dance like a buffoon. Like, just get a laugh. Because if you're not getting those early in comedy, you're not going to come back. You're just going to bomb too much. And then he said, number two, do what makes you laugh. And what are your ideas? So that's kind of important. Like, that's where you're putting a little bit of you into the comedy. Like, what gets you? And I don't really remember what the last one was.
I don't remember him ever thinking that you wanted to think or mentioning that as far as, like, saying think what somebody else would think was funny, because that wouldn't be the case. But
well, I mean, you know, it's practice, too. Like, that's why once you get to the stage two of that, you know, you've really got to practice a lot, because obviously what you find funny is not necessarily what other people find funny, so you just keep working it. Oh, I think the third one was actually the ideas. You take things that you think are interesting and turn that into a joke.
That's the progression. That's the progression. You know? I mean, that makes sense. That is a good three-step process if you can diagnose it and starting out that
well, but it's important to kind of separate that with somewhat of a timeline, though, too, I would say, because if somebody gave you those three rules and you started formulating ideas that incorporated all of them early on, you'd probably be way over your head. Point. Like, that would probably be too much to do.
Yeah.
Oh, the DMT story with Doug was rough. Yeah, that was a hell of a trip for him. Can you imagine?
I cannot.
He wakes up and he's saying, "Life eats life," and we've already been here. Like,
when
my
he
God.
Said that, I had a similar experience. Not life eats life. That's kind of enlightening, to be honest. At the end of the day, but I had a similar experience. I did that. I did salvia one time. Are you familiar with that? Have you ever heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, bro! I took like the smallest little bong rip. I'll never forget. I took it and just laid back on the bed, and I remember feeling like super euphoric, but also I lost touch with like anything I knew. Like, I didn't even know like what a hand was or like any sense of reality I ever had. I was like, oh my. And then I remember there being a brief second where I was like, oh God, I hope this isn't the end. I come back, and then like I opened my eyes and I came up and I came to, and I was like, I get it now. And they have it, like, all on tape. And this all happens within, like, 1 minute span, like a 60-second span. And I'm...
No shit.
So when he said that, that kind of resonated with me. I was like, I kind of understand it. There's, like, this clarity of a moment that happens sometimes when you do some wild shit that can't really be recreated with just normal life, to be honest.
Damn. Yeah, that one sounds weird. I don't want to try that one ever.
I have no desire. I have no desire. To be honest with you, it's like I lost everything. When I say everything, like I didn't even know what a body was. I didn't know what breathing was. I didn't know anything. But somehow I was conscious still. So it was like...
That sounds terrifying.
It was legitimately terrifying. Like, every single thing you know.
People do that for fun. Can you believe that shit?
You've seen those salvia tapes where those kids, like, jump out of the window and stuff. Have you seen that? They'll take salvia and then just, like, bust out of the window and fall to the ground. Like, it's insane.
What?
I would not suggest it for all intents and purposes, but...
Not recommended.
But it was an interesting experience. I will say it's nice to have that frame of reference because there was a moment of clarity in there that I probably was similar to Stanhope's as far as life eats life. It's like I'm always intrigued by nature, just how it unfolds and the progression. Like, it's amazing. He was talking.
Yeah, let's jump over to Tony Hinchcliffe and crack on with the next attack on a celebrity, which is Chappelle. Now, you just saw Chappelle recently, right?
I was there two nights before the interaction. That was crazy.
Unbelievable. So what is the story of this guy? He's like some homeless guy that is pronouns and decided that he would potentially stab Dave Chappelle to death.
They decided that he was going to... I mean, how did he get in there, first of all? How did he get in there? I went to the show. I don't know. How many phones were there, too? And how many knives were in there? Joe brought up a good point. He's like, how many knives were in there to cut the bags open? If you would have seen these bags, they made you put your phone in. They were pretty, like, advanced. Like, they didn't look like you couldn't just open it. It was not a...
You know, I thought of that, too, but it could also be that maybe a few people there had multiple phones. You know, like, some people have a work phone and their regular phone. And maybe they just put one in the bag, and when it kicked off, they ripped that bitch out.
I'm not saying there's going to be a portion of people that'll find a way around the security, which obviously they did. The videos were few and far between, relatively speaking. I've only seen a few different angles, but the fact that he did that rushed him. It was a knife shaped as a gun. Like, the weirdest thing, why would you ever, the weirdest weapon and the worst case scenario you could ever think to try and do to somebody. Because everybody's going to kill you if they think you have a gun. If you have a knife, they're still going to kill you, but a knife's a little less intrusive than a gun, I think.
Yeah. Well, they need better security. I mean, there's no way around it. Like, these guys just need decent security.
I mean, they're
being attacked.
He brought up a good point as far as hiring, like, off-duty cops and whatnot. Because you and I have worked security. I understand at these events you get paid, what, like, 20? You get paid a little bit more than minimum wage. But at the end of the day, you're just a guy standing around doing a job. It's not – your incentive is not necessarily there. I think they do need, like, off-duty cops or somebody that has an incentive to be there. Because otherwise, I mean –
Well, you gotta pay professional security teams for sure. I mean, I've worked in bars and clubs with so many different security guys, and you know, some of them are paying some attention, some of them are just talking to girls, some of them don't give a shit, just want to go home, and then you know, some are even like drinking on the job, and that's just like the worst case because they're just gonna want to get in fights.
Have you had any wild stories as a security guard?
Tons of them. I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, when I worked in clubs in England back in the early 2000s, I mean, there were some wild nights. I worked in Swindon, and Swindon Town can get quite rough. And there would be some – I mean, our first night at this club called The Apartments, it was really nice. It was like three floors, and it was – like pretty professionally set up. Like, we wore suits, we worked with a good team. Our team was mostly ex-military guys. Me and my buddy Ash were not, but you know, we were just lucky to get hired there, and we'd been working at these other bars for like 6 months, so they, you know, trusted us enough to come to The apartment. So there we had headsets on. They would have these little calls, so they would be like Lazy Boy on the dance floor or Lazy Boy in the hallway, and that meant that it looked like there was some trouble brewing, so people had to be ready. And then we had another call that was called 1010, and that meant that everybody had to rush to whatever the location was. Well, and they gave us clip-on ties too. And at first, I didn't know why. I was like, why? Why don't we just wear regular ties? And the one guy just laughed at me, and he's like, oh, you'll find out one day. I was like, all right, whatever. So my buddy that I was working with, that I grew up with, is down on the front of the club, just hanging out, letting people in. And he's a handsome guy, so he was getting a lot of attention. And some of the other security guys went down there and were just watching him flirt with everybody. And it was quite funny to them. What wasn't funny to me is I realized all the security left the main dance floor where I was, and some shit started to go down. So I'm like trying to figure out how to use my headset thing. I'm like, do I push the button? Is this the button? And I was like, hey guys, lazy boy on the dance floor, lazy button. No one was coming. Nobody was coming at all. And then a fight broke out, and I was like, 10-10 on the dance floor, 10-10, and nobody still came. And I was like, this is fucking ridiculous. So I had to get in the middle of it. And some guy grabs my tie, pulls it so that he could headbutt me. But of course, the tie fell off because it was a clip-on, and he fell straight to the ground. And then I was like, oh, that's why we have these ties. Yeah, and dude, then I was right in the middle of it, just like headlocking one guy. I didn't know what I was doing, dude. It was a mess. Thank God they were so drunk. Otherwise, I would have just got the crap beat out of me. It was not fun. Not fun at all. And by the time everybody got up there, it was just a mess of people laying on the floor and me just panicking.
First of all, the only time that I think I could get on board with something like that is if I was wearing a suit and tie and had a headpiece and I could say 10-10, and I thought I'd be like, all right, this is a little bit more important than wearing a shirt that says security. Second thing to that.
I certainly felt like a badass until the event went down, and then I felt like a complete idiot.
Second thing that happens, I feel like if that situation unfolds, first thing that goes through my head is I'm taking my tie off, and I'm taking this thing out of my ear, and I'm going to the bathroom. they don't pay me enough.
Yeah.
I mean, unless all the other homies were down there, then I'd be like, all right, let's get in this, and we could break it up. But if I'm solo in that situation, I don't think you pay me enough.
Dude, if I had known nobody was going to come very quickly, I probably would have done that too. But I was under the impression that people would be on their way real fast, and that was not the case.
Fair enough.
It was not the case. I was holding people in a very awkward position, laying on the ground, and no one was coming. And I'm like, I don't know what to do now. I don't know what the next move is.
That's a wild spot.
It was before I did any jiu-jitsu either, so there wasn't even like a cool choke I had or anything. There was just mostly panic. And holding on to
people. I felt
a smaller sliver
of that, but working down here in Venice at Cabo, I remember there was a gang fight that broke out, and there was like one dude snatched a chain off another dude, and it was a whole thing, probably 10-on-10, and I saw a dude pick up a chair, and it was he did smash it over the dude, but I was like, do I care about this chair? I had like that thought through my mind, and I was like, I don't care about this chair. And I just moved out of the way. I was like, they don't pay me enough for this. But it was an interesting moment where I was like, I guess you guys are just going to do what you're going to do. I have nothing to do with it.
It's a cheap chair. Cheap chair. Don't worry about it. Good chairs. You got to intervene.
Fair enough.
Heavy chairs. You got to intervene. Ooh, that's reasonable.
I don't think you're picking up a heavy chair too many times, but I agree.
That's a good point.
He started talking about those immigration situation as far as like how many people get deported and how many people are sneaking over the border or whatever it is. And then he showed that video. I don't know if you had an opportunity to see that, but he showed the video of Mike Pence overlooking all the people that were like in cages.
Oh yeah, that was weird.
That was a rough sight to see. I mean, and then he was like, we have watchtowers to see it. Like, that's like not humane. I mean, granted, I'm not there. I don't know the circumstance. I don't know how you deal with it, but that is like human to human. That is not feasible in my mind.
It definitely does sound like some shitty things are going on when it comes to, you know, how people are treated at the border, for sure. And I don't really get why it's such a bad thing to let people in. Like, okay, you don't want
the cartels,
awful criminals coming into the country and then committing terrible crimes or setting up gangs and things here. Obviously, that's bad, right? But there's a lot of people that are just immigrating here for better life. I mean, shit, I immigrated here and my life is better. I don't know. Can we not afford like a really good system to get people in?
It's a good question. Out of curiosity, I mean, I can see it from a lot of like third world countries and obviously Mexico, but coming from your perspective, how and what is better living in the U.S. as opposed to UK?
I mean, look, there's more opportunity here for things. There really is. And there's like an attitude here where if you have an idea or you want to start a business, I think Joe talked about this recently with the an English guy, the reporter that came on a couple of weeks ago. What was his name? Murray, maybe?
Dr. Douglas Murray.
Yeah, I don't think he was a doctor.
Maybe not. You're right.
Anyway, whatever, that guy. And they were talking about attitudes in England and America. And I agree with him. It is something that I've noticed. Like, let's say we want to start this podcast, right, for example. And then we've got our silly idea for a podcast, and we're like, yeah, we're going to make a studio, and hopefully one day it can be like something we do, like kind of full-time, whatever. You know, a lot of times people in the U.S. will be like, hey, that's a great idea, and that's cool. You should do things that you want to do, and if you're passionate about it and work at it and blah, blah, blah. Generally, you wouldn't get that kind of encouragement in England. I mean, I can't speak for everybody there, obviously, but I noticed it with, like, my family and a lot of my friends. It's like, nah, that's stupid. That's going to be too hard. You should just get a regular job. It's a little bit
that's
like that.
That's pretty self-reflective, to be honest. There's a lot of enlightening thoughts to at least acknowledge that. It's funny that, I mean, not funny you say that, but that is a weird thing to just think that a whole country has, like, a general mindset of just negativity. I wonder what that stems from. Like, what you start...
It's hard to say if it's like a mindset of negativity. I don't know. Maybe it's a mindset of like practicality, like big risks and do, you know, it's like they're survivors over there. That society's been around thousands of years.
I can appreciate that angle, to be honest.
So they're like, hey, do things that work, do things that we've been doing. Like be a carpenter. You always need carpenters. But maybe you can't be a YouTuber or a stand-up comedian. And that's kind of reasonable advice. But for me personally, somebody that likes to try doing odd things that are difficult and probably have a high failure rate, I at least like to be surrounded by people that are encouraging they do it.
Hell yeah, I think that's good. That's a good piece right there, to be honest. I think that you just need to surround yourself with people of the like-mindedness, but I couldn't agree more. That's an interesting trait, you know, because I have heard that multiple times. It's weird. I don't know. I wonder if that has anything to do with the weather.
It might do. It's raining all the time. Let's go up to Seattle and see if people say the same thing up there.
I just talked to a dude from Seattle recently, and he was like, I'm moving out of there. He's like, it's still the same price, but the weather's the same, and nothing, and everything's shut down, and it's not the same. So I was like, interesting. He's like, the cost of living is the same exact out here in California, but he's like, what am I paying for? He's like, everybody's so divided. And I was like, that's an interesting take. I did not know that, but I did know that throughout the pandemic and whatnot, Seattle was definitely under the microscope, more or less, similar to LA, you know?
Cost of living here in Bozeman is beyond. It doesn't even make any sense. It's like you even go on Zillow to look at renting places, and you know they had like estimated rent on there. The rent that they want to get for is double that number, and they're getting it.
I mean, a place
that says like 2,000 will sell for 4,000.
I think
no
that's
problem.
Across the board, but definitely it's so interesting. I wonder how Rogan and like Ranella and these episodes are in, because like, the places they talk about moving to are Austin and Montana. A lot of the time, a lot of the guests, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'd slow down with the Montana one unless you got a shitload of money.
Interesting.
It's like so many people have come up here. It's like things have got expensive, and buying property is really difficult. And even renting places it's pushing a lot of the locals out because they just won't be able to afford to live in Bozeman anymore.
Wild. I wonder what, I mean, I think that people are just moving out of major cities at the moment, too. I think that a lot. I don't know. It's a weird time. I still enjoy where I live, but I definitely want to visit Bozeman. It looks beautiful, too, and I've heard multiple people talk about it, so that probably has...
It certainly is that. I mean, it's an incredible place. Where I was out on the river today was just unreal. You're looking at these mountains. You can't even believe that this is, like, on planet Earth. It's something else. Talking about beautiful things, they were talking about Tony's Corvette.
The way they were talking about it.
Now, I've seen it. I've seen his at the Comedy Store. He's a black one. And he has a personalized plate, too. And I think it says roast. Nice. No, maybe it doesn't. It says something that's, like, related to his stand-up, though. But it's a dope car. It's really, really fucking cool looking. And every time I see those, it takes me a second to realize they're not Lamborghinis. That might just be because I'm a bit dumb and I don't, like, see the difference right away. But the new ones are really sharp.
I think they look like, I don't know if you remember the Acura NSX back in the day. I don't know if you remember that car, but it kind of reminds me of that car a lot more. Maybe like a Ferrari, but I see the Lamborghini. It's so dope what he was talking about, how it like comes up 5 inches so it avoids scraping and stuff. I'm just like, that is...
Yeah, and it remembers where it needed to do that on the GPS or whatever. I think that's... It's badass. I mean, look, if you've got... I don't know what they cost. I think they're like 60 or 70,000 maybe. But I mean, if that's a budget that you have and you've always wanted a supercar, I mean, that's about as close as you need to get to one.
I'm still torn the way that Joe talks about the plaid Tesla. It seems like there's not really a different way to go.
Oh, yeah, that's the most baller of all baller. But, I mean, that's like 140 grand. So, right there, that's two Corvettes. And, you know, you're missing a lot of
intricacies.
A race car when it makes no noise. But, if you just want a spaceship from
some
the
part
future,
of OCD about me is like, that sounds awesome. Just silent friggin' speed, you know? I was just in my buddy's S550 Benz today, and we got up pretty quick cruising down Lincoln. But I was like, I wonder what the Tesla's like. Your face just must be smashed up against the friggin' seats. I don't know.
Dude, it's the fastest thing ever made. I mean, by quite a long way. I mean, it's unbelievable. It doesn't even make any sense. I would love to go for a ride in a plaid Tesla. Right. If anyone out there has one, just let me know, and I'll come visit
you.
Let's
rock that out while you're out here in L.A. What was I going to say?
I guess our Zoom meeting time expired. Maybe we should stop being cheap asses and pay them $5 a month so we can talk to each other.
We're both
longer.
Getting Corvettes, so we'll get somewhere.
Oh, we are getting Corvettes now.
What'd you think?
All right, let's jump over.
Well, I wanted to talk about him talking about kicking somebody compared to golf. Just that was one thing I want to talk about. How much difficulty was in that? And he was so passionate about it, but it's a weird... Have you ever played golf?
No. I mean, I've swung a club. I know it takes... It takes a shit ton of practice and proficiency to get really good at golf. But if you're just talking about driving balls from a driving range, I mean, I was kind of smashing them pretty hard by the end of that first day. Now, they weren't going anywhere near where I wanted them to go. But they were going a long distance away from my body. So I was like, all right, well, I at least can hit a thing. But Joe's talking about a person in front of you that's avoiding you kicking them and you're kicking them. I mean, I guess it depends what kind of kick you're using because some are more complicated than others. I mean, he likes to do that wheel kick where he spins around and kicks them. I mean, people can move. And then you've just put a lot of power into nothing. It's very complicated motion.
He made a very good argument. I was going to say that I think he pretty much shut down the golf argument. Trying to kick something that's moving is different than trying to kick a station or hit something stationary. You can figure that out. But I do see that the conversation is worth having.
There's probably an argument both ways, right? I'm sure if you were in a room with a bunch of golfers, you'd feel like you lost your kicking argument and vice versa. So
that's a true story.
True story, yeah. So Radio Raheem, now he's Dave's friend. I guess he was there the day of that attack. He was pretty upset and frustrated, and he brought up something really interesting that you know, kind of really wasn't talked about. Like, Dave could have died. So instead of this just being this funny thing that everyone's like, well, that was crazy, huh? No, it could be like mourning Dave Chappelle today. And I think that's something that people should really think about in regards to the safety of these people, because this wasn't a Chris Rock slap. This was an attempted murder, in a sense.
That. I mean, think about John Lennon. Think about all kinds of people that have been in the limelight that have passed away like that. Well, I mean, not to say it'd be fitting at all, and I love Dave, but, I, when he brought that conversation up, that thought definitely went through my mind. It'd be naive to say otherwise, because... what a weird time, too. Like, it seems like every event is escalating the next event. Like, you know what I mean? In some weird, cosmic way, but it's like they saw the Will Smith thing, and then all of a sudden that happens, and then hopefully we nipped it in the bud when you saw that dude's arm, like, completely jacked up. You're like, all right, hopefully people will be like, we shouldn't do that, but jeez.
That's not a deterrent, you don't think? Dude. Like, people that are, like, lunatics, no, they're not going to look at that beat-up guy and think, oh, I'm not going to do the murder I was planning because of that. That's not the way to fix it. The way to fix it is to get better security.
Do we think that he – what are your thoughts? I mean, we don't know. We weren't there in the moment, but I guess it's not even worth speculating on to be like, do we really think you tried to kill him? I don't know. So
he had a knife.
But it seemed like he
– It was his plan, I think. I think he posted something on Twitter saying, like, Dave is next or something like this. I mean, it wasn't good. If you go somewhere with a plan to attack somebody and you happen to have a particular weapon, I think it's safe to assume you were planning on using that weapon at some point.
You knew the consequences prior, too, that's for sure. You weren't just hopefully you weren't just trying to make a spectacle, because, Jesus, what a – it makes my heart beat fast just thinking about it, like –
The problem is, we look at it like it was us making that choice, right? And if it was, then, you know, you would think about things like we think about all our choices, which ultimately don't lead us to wanting to kill people. So when it comes to this guy, to think that he sat there really contemplating, you know, all the ins and outs of what this means and what the impact is and how he'll get in trouble, I doubt he got that far.
Yeah. That's a good point. I don't know. That's like you said. Yeah. I mean, he's obviously got some mental issues at the end of the day. So,
well, I mean, they bring up things like government overreach, right? So, in another stance of this, it's like if you take somebody that did that at the airport, right? That, like, rushed someone on a plane or a TSA, and they had those weapons. Well, the government immediately changes all the protocols immediately. They talked about the shoe bomber or whatever. It's like one person tries to blow up their shoes one time, and now everyone takes their shoes off for all of time. And, you know, I guess that what I'm saying is there's some sort of balance here. It's like, yeah, there's no protection for Dave Chappelle at this place. He gets attacked right after
Will Smith
does, and, you know... Nobody says, well, let's make guarantee that we have the best security. And in the other side of it, it's like something happens 20 years ago on a plane, and then we've got to just go through this rigmarole forever. It's like old ladies have to take their shoes off at the airport.
Oh, man, yeah. It's
come on now.
Well, it's that... I don't know how you describe that, man. It's so fitting with so many issues right now, too, even with the mask thing. Like, we've talked about that a million times. It's the same idea. It's just this, like, thought process that you need to think for yourself, and we need to adapt that from a larger level. Like, we need to, like, start adapting some logic and start
But, I mean, you can't think for yourself about the shoes. They make you take them off. You don't have a choice.
Right, but Well, my point is we need to maybe start rectifying some of these behaviors and acknowledge that, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this just comes back to the state of the news, though. It's like, okay, well, first we have to get good information from news sources that we trust so that as a nation, people can start to kind of put these good ideas together and then reforms can come from it. But it doesn't seem to work that way at all. I mean, they brought up Jon Stewart on The Daily Show and how that was probably the best, most useful news that existed. And now he doesn't do it anymore.
That's where I got all my news growing up, to be honest. Like, I look back on that. That's 100%. It is weird. He's got real, real left, but either way.
He's still amazing,
and he comes from a caring place all the time. It's just a weird thing to be attached to certain ideas, but I think
even the Colbert. I always thought the Colbert Report was really good too. He should have stayed doing that. He's so much better.
I remember listening to his book. It was like four CDs. I listened to that like on a road trip, just consecutive. It was great. He's so smart. He's so well said too. It's weird watching a guy get. Joe hasn't knocked him down, but he said that he got caught up in the machine, more or less, which when you're seeking money and you want to be successful, it's a weird thing to have to be caught up. Joe's in an interesting spot where he gets he's like a one of a kind that gets to say what he wants to say and people still support it, you know? Like, the vast majority of folks have to choose a side. That's the thing. It's like, it's unfortunate. I did appreciate Joe talking about his kind of evolution as a person. Like, I don't think I've ever heard him really talk about that as far as when he was talking about being upset with people being lazy in his early 20s, like, I could kind of relate to that. Like, but at the same time, I needed to look internally and be like, because you can see it in yourself. You know what I mean? That's why he talked about it. Something just resonated when he said that. It was, you get frustrated with people being lazy because, you know, that's a possibility that you might be doing or you might explore, you know?
Well, he said he was hypercritical of people early in life. And was always looking for their weaknesses to exploit them because I guess he was trying to find his own. And in some ways, that's probably a fairly useful reflection. Absolutely. But in a young person with a lot of energy and aggression, it can probably make you quite argumentative. Absolutely. And I mean, a lot of judgment as well, generally, is... is not great because you'll have a tendency to just judge people too quickly. But saying that, I mean, this was in his 20s when he was doing this. And he's also developed into the man that he is today, which is a very trusted individual with a really good outlook on himself and other people. And maybe that's part of the process. Maybe he had to do that to reach those other parts. You know, we're not born like a completed thing. We have to learn as we go.
I love the way he talks about failure and loss. And he's like, it doesn't define you. It's an opportunity to be resilient. Like, and those are good times to just be self-reflective. Like, the way he's talked about that is so... I don't even know if inspiring is the right word or motivating. You don't need to have some word attached. It just seems natural. Like, you don't necessarily need to approach loss as negative. Be like, all right, this is a fresh time to start something new. Like, easier said than done in the moment, but that's always going to be retrospect. You just, like, if you're going through hell, man, you got to just keep going a lot of the time. I think that that's vital to a successful life. Like, we're learning that, and it's a daily process. I don't necessarily know that I've ever heard him make reference to that, so it was kind of just like it hit a chord with me hearing him say that, because it was like, it's nice to be so self-reflective, and I can look back on my 20s and stuff. We all say in my 20s, da-da-da-da, but I feel like that was like a good thing. And he talked about how martial arts kind of like helped facilitate a good angle for him to channel that, like, that energy, you know what I mean? He's like, you don't necessarily had to like me. He's like, I just wanted to be a winner and not a loser. And I was like, dude, I get where you're coming from. Because you don't as long as you're in the pursuit of winning, you're a winner. But if you just accept loss, you're a loser. I mean, that's kind of what I grasp from that.
Yeah, I mean, that is reasonable. I think you just have to be careful going down that winner route because it can make you pretty, you know, unempathetic. Right. And not really give a shit about other people, just yourself and succeeding, which can turn into something fairly ugly as well. So there's definitely a balance in there. But yeah, who wants to be a loser? Like, nobody does. That's where probably the biggest amount of depression in humans come from, is just that thought about themselves.
I mean, we always go back to exercise and consistency and all these words, but it's so true, man. It's like, don't accept loss. Never accept loss. I mean, use it as a tool to get better, I think, is the name of the game. You know, we're all doing it. It's a daily process, you know?
Right. Well, it's like try your best to remind yourself that a failure doesn't necessarily mean you suck. It just meant that you didn't get it right or it wasn't meant to be. And just watch your own process. Like, did you put enough time in? Did you work hard enough with it? Did you plan well enough? Did you practice enough? You know, did you do enough homework? I mean, oftentimes you'll find something in there, in that process, that you could improve on. And just focus on that and then see if the outcome is different. And keep trying. I think it's just the quitting of things, which is really bad. It's like you get a failure and you just stop. And if you notice that pattern in your life, it's a really good... I mean, I've had it for sure lots of times. But I try to identify it and then go, shit, yeah, I've been quitting a lot at these things. I really should go back and find out why that's happening and see if I can
fix it. I just saw a meme recently that was kind of hit home, but it was like, if you try and you fail... You did more than like 99% of people because you tried. But the idea that like you can at least have a like look back and be like, I failed, then you can build on that. People appreciate failures. People appreciate humility. People appreciate learning from other experiences and getting better because of it. There's no map or code of how to do this life. We're all just kind of moving through it, figuring it out. So it's like loss and failure are building blocks in that process, I think.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, on top of that, you know, it goes back to what Radio was saying about Joe, how he's like diversified his career because he doesn't in some ways trust just one thing to work. So he has multiples and, you know, he kind of fell into some of them and didn't expect them to pay off. But like all his strategy, he keeps working at it, got better at it and it worked. But then also talking about kind of not that Joe is a doomsday prepper, but he's like prepared. He knows how to hunt. He knows how to get food. He thinks about what would happen if the power goes out. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like an overall not really trusting other people than himself to keep shit moving. And there's something to that, man. I mean, people often sit back. I know we did it in LA. We just sat there. COVID came and we're like, oh, the government can take care of it. And then we just watched the state completely destroy itself and we're like, shit, they can't do it at all.
I'm so glad he illuminated that point and you brought that up. It's I'm a piece in the cog too, but I like the idea that now I'm going to think about it, and I have thought about it, but hearing him say that definitely provides a new light and a new perspective on it, because we all need to be thinking about that. We all need to embrace that. That's not just like a him thing. We can't just be like, all right, there's a few people doing that. Like, now that we have that information, it's our responsibility to be like, all right, if we all are thinking this, the fucking people at the top aren't going to have as much power because there's not going to be as many sheep just running around. People are going to be questioning things and looking at stuff and wondering why and asking valid questions that provide, like, we're all just kind of moving through. Like, I think you made a good analogy right there. During COVID, the government will figure it out, and everybody's just showing up to work with their cup of coffee sitting by the cooler, theoretically or metaphorically, doing the same shit. It's like, we don't know if a solar flare hits. When he brought that up, I was like, oh, shit, that's a good point. I think that it's the...
Yeah, I mean, think about your situation. If the power went out right now, this second, and all the power's gone... Like, what are your moves? Like, I know what I do. Like, half of the people I know up here have generators. Half of everyone else is a hunter, so they've probably got, like, 3 years worth of food. And, you know, everyone, and they know how to get more of it. And the survival factor up here would be incredibly high. Like, plans would be in place fairly quickly, and, you know, stuff would start moving. But you're right in the middle of Venice. I mean, dude, to be honest, you'd be fucked.
I'm resilient. I'd figure it out. But.
Yeah, well, dude, give it a week. You'd be eating people in the street.
Here's my plan. I would come up with a plan, obviously. We'd come up with a plan. First and foremost, we diagnose the situation and see what. I wanted to bring this up about, now that you mentioned this, that Liver King situation. That guy's bounced back on Rogan and said he's all natty.
Well, so he can say whatever he wants. Let's see testing. Let's send him over to USADA.
I think
that's what we should do.
I think that's a reasonable explanation, because you can't just say. He did, and to his credit, he goes, I appreciate Joe mentioning me, he's like, I'd love to come on the show someday. They must have a PR. He was appreciative of it. It was great the way he said it, to be honest. He was like, I've never done that, but I appreciate him reaching out. He approached it pretty eloquent. I got to give him credit.
Yeah, I mean, Joe wasn't being cruel.
Not cruel.
I mean, he was just like, this guy looks ginormous. And anyone that looks that big probably does.
I follow him on Instagram, and he every day is posting some intense workouts that would justify him looking the way he does. So I hear what Joe's saying, but if he's truly living the lifestyle that he is, like, it's a possibility that he could live that way.
Dude, he's an unusual size no matter how hard he would work out. So he's either massively genetically gifted, and it's
which
all
is a
and
possibility.
It could be. I don't know. I'm not taking a stand here either way, but it's also like he's ginormous. Like
I just like to believe that
that would be the biggest dude at the gym by far. Maybe you can do it that way, but
I've seen him take like 50 shots of blood. Like not that makes him big. It is a weird thing. It's a weird thing, but who knows?
I think you're under his Instagram spell.
Hey, let me stand back. I say, let's send him over to USADA. I think Joe should just fire back with that. That's fair. Then we can solve the problem, right? That makes sense.
Let's get some P-tests going. I mean, that would be a super ballsy move for him. And if he is natural, I'd want to prove that as hard 100%. As I could. And to say, oh, why should he have to prove it just because someone called him out?
That's a dumb argument. Well, that's a dumb argument. Let's just prove it.
But, but this is kind of who you are. You're a guy that doesn't look like you are natural, but you're selling this natural idea of
and
whatever it is.
He doesn't look like a dude that's roided up trying to be in like bodybuilding competitions. He's just jacked. Like he looks in.
Yeah, but there's levels to how much you take. I mean, it's not like you're on it or you're not, and you're Mr. Olympia size or you're not. You can take like low dose.
Let's give him a shout out, Liver King. Let's send you over to USADA and let's put it to rest.
All right, challenges out there. My God, he's like listening to this. Like, okay, that's it. Rogan said it. Now these idiots, I'll do it.
That's fair.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening. As always, check out our website. All the links in the bio. Follow Garrett on Instagram, and you can watch his, raw diet. Ball eating shit.
A lot of
push-ups. But yeah, thank you guys so much, and we'll
see
you next week.
Peace and love, guys. Peace.